to the Roma Press Podcast with John Solano.
Hello, everybody. Welcome back to another edition of the Roma Press Podcast. As always, we hope you are doing well. We hope you are staying safe. So after last week's first edition of the Look Back series, we asked you again which season you would like for us to review. We threw out there 2010-2011, 2011-2012, 2012-2013, and then we also threw out, we also gave you the option of 2016-2017, and that is the one everybody chose, which, to be honest, Andy, I was kind of surprised by that because, again, other than 2009-2010, this is another season where obviously not as close as 2009-2010, but still extremely heartbreaking. I mean, they finished 4 points behind Juve.
Yeah, and also it's funny to see how people, instead of going chronologically, they prefer to jump to the fondest sort of memories, most positive seasons, because 16-17 is still really vivid in my mind, probably because of how much talent we had and just one of the more stable years. And so I think it's going to be fun to get to dive into it. There is a lot of positives and a lot of negatives. Obviously, the end of the line for Totti, the end of the line for Spalletti as well. And, you know, on one hand, a truly great season with some great football. And otherwise, it's, again, one of those seasons, one of those Roma seasons that you wish for more.
All right, but let's get into it. The 2016-2017 season at Roma.
Che lamenta di essere stato spostato da Nainggolan. Inter sbilanciata. Nainggolan fino in fondo. Nainggolan! La doppietta del ninja! 2-0 Roma al 56esimo. Tra le proteste dei nerazzurri, un giocatore semplicemente meraviglioso. Raja Nainggolan. E sono 9. In questa stagione.
All right, so just like last time, we're going to do a quick discussion on the transfer market. We will discuss high moments, low moments, memorable matches, worst matches, and sort of go through our best players of that season. So let's discuss the transfer market. So a lot of what Roma did that summer was more or less making the players they had on loan permanent, right? Because we all remember who arrived in that January transfer market in the winter of 2016, right? We had El Shaarawy, we had Perotti. Now in the summer, what Roma do is they buy Alisson, as many of you remember. They bring back Szczesny on a loan. They bring in Mario Rui from Empoli, Juan Jesus, Hoof from Inter. I know this one is your favorite.
And mind you, Mario Rui is considered a difference maker.
he is. They bring in, I know your favorite, Thomas Vermaelen from Barcelona. They bring in Bruno Perez on loan with option to buy. And then they also bring in Federico Fazio from Tottenham Hotspurs. And then in the summer, in the winter, January of 2017, they also welcomed Clément Grenier. Now, as far as departures that summer, there really were not many notable ones. Iago Falque left. That was a very weird one. I forget he even existed. Remember, he was so critical in the early parts of that 2015-2016 season. And then he fell off the map once Spalletti took over.
Yeah, I think he felt that. I agree. I think he felt it like that was his chance to sort of advance in his career, and he just didn't take the chance.
We also had Leandro Castan leave. We had Wenger. He's another guy. You forget he even existed. Seydou Doumbia, he left. Who else here? Zukanovic.
Lucas Digne.
Lucas Digne leaves the club. That was one of the ones that probably hurt the most, right? I mean, that departure was felt. Now, obviously, we'll get into Emerson Palmieri, who was sensational this season. But we also had De Sanctis leave. He left for Monaco. Yuchan, he returned to Fenerbahce. Maicon, his contract expired. Sadio Keita, a guy I know you love, his contract expired as well. And that's it, because you had Jajic, but he was on loan at Inter the season before. So technically, he left in 2015-2016. In Toro Cities, there's a name. he left for Bologna. So it was very interesting market, to say the least. Obviously, again, we have the benefit of hindsight. So at the time, I would say most of these made a lot of sense, except Juan Jesus. I, to this day, and it's not even that Juan Jesus cost 10 million euros. It's the wages that they handed him. Sabatini, for the most part, I don't know if we want to grade him on a scale of 10 during his time at Roma. I would give him probably a 7, 7.5, maybe an 8. I thought he was pretty good.
Yeah.
This one, though.
But for that particular transfer market, man, that was like a big fuck you. Like, come on. Gerson, Juan Jesus.
Juan Jesus, that's the one that. I mean, it's not as if he was a difference maker at Inter, right? I mean, this is a guy who was even...
He was a meme at
Inter. He was a meme
Inter.
Even
Everybody
at Inter, right?
I don't understand what happened. I think this was like a... just. It seems like a very rushed transfer market, because on one hand, you have decisions that make sense considering what those players had done before. So Mario Rui at Empoli, solid fullback. Bruno Perez at Torino, everybody remembers him for that goal against Juve, and made sense. He was a solid player at Torino, but then you had Fazio, who was sort of like a bench warmer at Tottenham, and then we'll get into it later. But to me, it was one of the revelations of that season.
Oh, 100%, yeah.
And then Thomas Vermaelen, who really a mixed bag, injured always. I really don't know what the point of that was. Maybe it was something along the lines of Smalling this season. but it clearly didn't work out. So to me, this market was so chaotic. And it was clear that something was off in the dynamics between Sabatini and the rest. And then you were left with Massara, who we know... For so long, he didn't know if he was going to stay at Roma. He didn't know if he had a future here. Then he left to go to Inter. Then he came back. Whatever happened then, if we're looking at what Spalletti was working with in that offseason, then, you know, that's he deserves an applause for what came afterwards.
Oh, absolutely. This market. The funny thing is. I mean, when you look back on it on paper, like, this looks like an incredibly strong Roma. But then I just remember thinking how many, or the biggest thing for me was the lack of depth.
Yes.
It was very clear that Bruno Perez was not the answer. We all remember what happened, right? Rudiger started playing on the right.
And do we want to remember when we realized that Leandro Paredes wasn't an all-star?
Oh, are we going to get into that now? Well, let's get into that now. I tell this story at least once every month on the podcast, but let me just bring it up again because, I don't know, I'm a glutton for punishment, I guess. So that summer, okay, Roma essentially had to choose that summer, okay? They had to choose between Paredes or bringing in Diawara from Bologna. Now, at the time, Roma had a deal in place for Diawara. Had a deal with Bologna, had a deal with Diawara's agent and his lawyer. It was done 100%. The only thing they had to do...
Sensational at Bologna, let's remember.
So good, so good. Him and Donza playing next to each other were so good. All Roma had to do was say yes. That's it, yes, and they bring him. Instead, and you'll hear whose fault it was from different sources. If you talk to Diawara's people, they'll say that it was Sabatini... who chose to keep Paredes at the club, because Paredes had offers from Milan. He had offers from abroad in Spain. So it was essentially Roma had to choose between Paredes and Diawara, and they chose Paredes. And everybody knows my opinion on that. I'm not going to hate on the guy. Now, it's interesting because some people think he's actually good. Like, even now at PSG, there are people who think he is a quality player. For me, I have said it time and time again. He is a futsal player. I have never seen anybody just make the most useless passes in a string of a match that I've ever seen in my life.
I mean, let's remember that people criticize Nzonzi for, you know, making lazy passes, but Paredes revealed himself to be just like that, making lazy passes throughout the entirety of the season. It's just that he got a lot of game time because we were running a midfield of three players, right, with Strootman, Nainggolan, and De Rossi, who are playing overtime. And, you know, for the small games against Pescara and the likes, and you know, and against Serbian Farmers in the Europa League, you needed Paredes. But not once in that whole season did he have a clear man of the match performance. Even though he scored goals, he had assists, but never had that impact, never found his footing in this team.
No. And I would say with that market, the biggest issue, now obviously they brought in Grenier in the winter, but I think even at the time, it seemed like, wow, this is what they're doing, because he would play in that 4-2-3-1 role. Obviously, you had Nainggolan playing as the 10. Even at the time, it seemed like, wow, okay, so this is what is happening. It's De Rossi, Strootman, and Paredes for that two-man midfield. That's it. We're not bringing in anything else.
This was easily one of the worst seasons in De Rossi's later part of his career.
Yes.
And it all starts in that game against Porto, and it carries on. And he was starting so many games exactly because of that, because Paredes was not a valid alternative. You had given Pjanic away, and you found yourself running a midfield of three players, one of which had suffered the worst injuries in Strootman, one of which who in Nainggolan, who was playing as a 10 and was phenomenal, and the other one was an aging De Rossi, who, seriously, that year, if you compare the two seasons with that year and Di Francesco's first year, it's two different players. And I believe that our shortcomings in that final year of Spalletti was mainly due to just the short bench, no valid alternatives to that midfield.
Oh, I couldn't agree more. And so let's get into the season now. Let's just go sort of through the campaign. So we all know how the season starts, right? Andy just mentioned it. Roma, they're in the preliminary rounds of the Champions League. They get a really good result in Portugal. 1-1. You're coming back home now. Second leg. Okay, this is going to happen, right? Roma going to advance.
Fucking hell, man. Fucking hell.
There is no, other than meltdown, I cannot describe that match in any other way. It was a complete and total loss of composure. It was a complete and total lack of character. In my memory, for how strong that Roma was, that is without question one of the lowest points I have ever felt about Roma within the last few years, because that Roma was so strong. And for them to perform like that...
No, I mean, it's first of all, let's remember what happened back in Portugal. First game back, first game for Vermaelen. What happens? Like,
happens? And hold on, you have to preface it. What is it happens in the first half?
Yes,
Vermaelen is sent off in. Hold on, what is it? I'm pulling up the match now. In 41 minutes, he's sent off. First match.
I remember the anticipation, oh my God, this is Manolas and Vermaelen, you know, this is going to be it. This is going to be the partnership. And then he gets the first yellow and then the second yellow and he's off. And Roma, you know, we're leading, and then boom, it happens as always. So yes, it was technically a good result going back to Rome, but still what you could have done and what went wrong perfectly in that game, and it definitely influenced what happened afterwards, which, again, as you said, is one of the lowest points I've seen Roma in recent years, probably top five worst moments of the decade, top five games of the decade. It, to me, that beats most of the 7-1 games and 6-1 games that we suffered, because it was so, you had no explanation for what was going on. You had De Rossi turning into Rambo and almost breaking an opponent's leg. You had Emerson, who was just playing completely brainless and like he was not a part of that team, and everybody started insulting him. And that's why later on that him turning it around was such a sensational moment for us in that season, because nobody expected it, because that game, everything went wrong. Szczesny made one of the worst exits you could possibly find a goalkeeper do. And it was a goodbye to Champions League for Totti. And it was probably one of the lowest points of that particular campaign.
Oh, 100%. I think the next lowest moment comes in April, which we will get to in a moment. But without question, in my opinion, if you want to just talk about deflation, a terrible way to begin your entire campaign, and it's not as if Porto were even that good against Roma. It was Roma. You have it 1-1 on aggregate coming home. And as I said, just a complete lack of any sort of maturity that you would expect from a big club with big players. So it was just an awful way to start the season. I mean, really, there's no other way to describe it. Now, obviously, Roma did, can we call it relatively well in the Europa League that season? Let's just jump to the Europa League now. Mm-hmm. Because obviously, Roma, they're eliminated from the preliminary rounds of the Champions League. They go into the Europa League, and they have what has to be the easiest group in the history of the competition. I can't even pronounce. Yeah.
Some of the worst teams you can possibly witness.
Yeah, so in their group, Roma had Astra Giorgio, Victoria yes. Pilsen, and then Austria Wien. That has to be, I don't know what the UEFA coefficients were at that time. That has to be, without question, the easiest group that maybe they've ever had in the club history, but they still somehow only got 12 points out of that. 3 wins, 3 draws, no losses.
I agree, but you have to consider that that's the only reason why Spalletti was basically at a certain moment playing those games with Sek, with Iturbe, and with Paredes, and Gerson, who was still finding his footing, and I guess that's his best description at this time at Roma. But that's what Spalletti was dealing with at the time. You had Iturbe, who was playing with Totti as two forwards. You had Paredes leading the midfield with Gerson. You had Juan Jesus in the defense. You had Sek, who I don't know if he's still alive. Playing as a fullback.
Play football anymore.
I don't know. I know he's from that generation of Nura. I think they were buddies, but he's the one. I don't know what it is. I mean, you look at this season, and there is a lot of great moments. Probably the fact that we managed to maintain such a good, going in the Serie A was also due to this accessible Europa League campaign that you could afford to play with your bench players.
So Roma, they finished first in the group. And then I remember where I was when this happened, when Roma drew Villarreal for the next round. Admittedly, I thought Roma were going to get knocked out. I remember tweeting it because Roma, I don't know what it is. They always seem to be unlucky when it comes to the draw in Europe, no matter what competition it is, Champions League, Europa League. But for me, one of the highest points of that entire season, Roma winning in Spain 4-0. Without question, one of their best performances,
so good.
Particularly when you consider it was in Europe. And I just remember the goal of Emerson. Do you remember that? That curling with the right
foot. Oh, man,
I retweeted it
2 days ago.
Oh, man.
That is
so good.
considering all the trouble you've had with fullbacks, and that in that particular moment in the campaign, Emerson was at his peak. We'll get to favorite players later, but in that game particularly, everything was going right. You had peak Dzeko. Dzeko was having a tremendous season, but that game was... he was at his sharpest. Like, it was... Yes. He manhandled Musacchio and everybody else. Emerson on that first goal loses Castillejo, embarrasses him. Then you had Strootman playing phenomenal, even though he struggled parts of that season. You had Nainggolan having the time of his life out there. That, to me, that game was, again, a perfect summary of Luciano's Spalletti's Roma in that season, that they dominated. That game, you went to Spain and you dominated from the first to the very last second.
Yeah. I mean, that for me, in terms of high points, that has to be in my top one or two moments of the entire season, because that was when everything came together, it seemed. And Dzeko, that hat trick he had against Villarreal, he had it. And I guess these things you think you remember, but they sort of get lost with time. He scored that hat trick in a span of 21 minutes. He had goals at the 65th minute, 79th minute, and 86th minute. So a 20-minute hat trick, essentially. Unbelievable. You just said, we'll talk about players in a moment. But for me, man, Dzeko of that season was... he was something to behold, because... First off, I was so happy for him for the way things happened that season, because let's just be honest, 2015, 2016 for him, the first season with him at Roma, guy was a joke, right?
Yeah, it's like Julio Baptista 2-0.
I still remember that miss he had against Palermo where Maicon delivers him this perfect cross.
Oh my
God. Dzeko hits it with his left foot. Literally nobody on the back post. And he... the ball drifts wide. It was just astonishing. But to see him rebound in this spectacular way, I mean, there were some people who wanted to sell Dzeko after that season. Nobody would have expected him to perform in the manner in which he did. So, A, I was happy for him, and B, I was astonished by him, because he was just at this level that Roma had not seen from a number nine in quite some time. I mean, we could debate who it was. You could say it was Batistuta. You could say it was Totti, whatever. I'm strictly talking about number nines. But yeah, I mean, that was a season where... and you have to consider, too, in terms of value, I know I bring this up a lot, but it was like Roma hit the lottery with Dzeko. For what they paid for him and the output they've gotten for him in these years is just astonishing to me. In 2016, 2017 was a peak. The way he performed in that match against Villarreal was nothing short of extraordinary. So Roma, they advanced 4-1 on aggregate against the Spanish side. And then, Andy, they come up against Lyon in the round of 16. Now, I don't know whether we should discuss the first leg or the second leg, because both are equally as depressing. Do you remember that 4-2 in France? Because I remember who I was watching it with. That was one of the most disappointing, I don't know if I've sworn that. Maybe Roma against Liverpool in the second leg. I think that was the last time maybe I swore that much at the television, but... my God, that 4-2. So Lyon, they defeat Roma 4-2 in France. And it was one of the most chaotic matches I think I have ever witnessed Roma participate in my entire life.
You know, it felt surreal to see us score, then them score, then us make these stupid mistakes. And at the end of the day, that's what cost us a trophy, because I believe that Roma was just extremely talented, and it's a disappointment to see that they came empty-handed when they had some of the best years for many of the players, including Dzeko, including Emerson, including Nainggolan, who we'll get to him later, but he was absolutely world-class.
Yeah, the 4-2 against Lyon, in my opinion, was much like the earlier match against Porto. Lack of character, lack of composure, lack of maturity, certainly. It was just so interesting. And Roma, now Roma, they lose 4-2 to Lyon again in France. And if you remember, the thing that essentially came back to kill them was, I don't know if you remember, Lacazette, in the dying, like, seconds of that match, he got a goal in the 93rd minute. And that, essentially, is what crashes Roma out of the competition. Because in the second leg, Roma, they defeat Lyon 2-1 in Rome.
Oh, man.
So they lose, yeah. So they lose the tie by one goal, 5-4 on aggregate. In that entire matchup, there are so many moments where you're watching and you're just so frustrated because you would expect more from this Roma. It was very, very disappointing. And even in the home leg, when Roma win the home leg 2-1, Lyon, they score a goal within the first 15, 16 minutes of the match. Now, Roma responded right back, but they just could not get another goal after that. Now, they got an own goal in the second half, but that was it.
Yeah.
They ultimately lose by one goal.
I think that was the time where the number of insults directed at Salah hit a peak for me, because that,
oh man,
I remember those
so
two
many
games
chances
were
wasted.
Just one after the other. I know that people, you know, we lost Salah and that was a great loss, but the player that we had compared to the player that Klopp has right now is two different ones, because Salah was excellent.
Two different, yes.
Don't get me, you know, yeah. Don't misunderstand me. He was excellent. He made the difference, and Spalletti knew it, and he even made a whole press conference about Salah's movement, and you know how he offered us. We were always advantaged with him in the starting lineup by the way he speed worked, by the way he just attacked the empty space in front of him. That was unmatched, but the chances that he missed in those games against Lyon and Lazio that proved to be crucial, it's something that I will never forget.
I think you just summed it up perfectly, though, the wasted chances. The one that always sticks out to me is from the previous season when Roma are facing Real Madrid in the Champions League. Do you remember how many chances he and Dzeko missed? That was the one where
I always go
back to that one.
That game.
Where, oh, my
yeah,
God.
That game.
So that was it for Roma in the Europa League. They crash out in the round of 16. As far as the Coppa Italia goes, Roma, they crashed out to Lazio 4-3 on aggregate. As Andy just said, it all sort of fell down and ended for Roma in March and April. That's when everything
That was it. Just those two months. That's all. Just incredible.
Yeah, because
incredible.
I mean, the entire season they have 7 losses from December. So from January to May, Roma lost 3 matches. And again, we say it time and time again, it's those ones that you lose in the beginning of the season that come back to absolutely kill you, because Roma had 2 losses in their first 6 matches. In their first 6 matches, they defeated Udinese, they drew with Cagliari, they defeated Sampdoria, lost to Fiorentina, defeated Crotone, and then lost to Torino.
And let's remember that draw against Cagliari where Spalletti gave us one of the best gifts of all time, where he just drops to his knees and starts slamming the grass on the sidelines because of how easily we conceded 2 goals.
Well, remember, they were up 2-0 in that match.
I believe it was Borriello who scored.
It was just... Yeah, it was.
Borriello.
Jeez, you got a good memory. Yes. Well, and it was funny because Roma against Cagliari, there was like a it was either 2 or 3 seasons in a row, or maybe it was just 2, where Roma had a 2-0 lead, and they just completely melt down in the second half. And I think if that's sort of like the theme for me with the Roma of this season, again, just the lack of maturity. The league campaign was great. There were so many moments where we could go back to, and they are just on such a higher level than everybody else. It's just moments where they sort of lose their head. That really was the overriding theme in this entire season. All right. So best moment of the season for you is what?
Oh, I have 2, and it's difficult to sort of pick one over the other. I think I will start by saying the derby, which was won with a Strootman goal. because it was just such a pain in the ass. I remember that derby was really as much of a derby as they have. It was physical, it was aggressive, and it was, and that goal just gave us so much energy going forward. And I think a lot of people still go back to that celebration. It felt like a derby, and it's probably one of the last derbies that really felt like one. And where Roma just won, and it gave you a boost, and you felt that the players got a boost from it. You felt that the fans got a boost from it. So that was a great memory. But then I have another moment, which is the game against Inter, where Raja scored those two bangers, and it was
one where he cuts to his right and lifts it over Handanovic. Oh my god!
And then the one where he basically runs for 40 meters and still has the strength to just shoot a rocket straight into the top of the goal. Because that was Roma, Spalletti's Roma at its peak. Like, that was pure dominance, and it was, everybody was rotating perfectly. And that was, if you want to look at, you know, a top five midfielder in the prime of his career, that's Raja in that season and in that game where, you know, he basically changed the complexity of the game. He changed how Roma worked. He was, everybody likes to say that he was Spalletti's new Perrotta, but he was much more than that, because he was just unarguably, just one of the very best in the world in that position. And that game was Roma reaffirming themselves as a valid, second place candidate. And easily one of the most beautiful games, that Roma played in recent years.
Oh, for sure. Mine similar to that is when, do you remember Roma? They hammered Milan at the San Siro late in the season.
Yes.
You had Dzeko, and then you had El Shaarawy, and then you had a penalty goal from De Rossi. I don't know what it is. I always hold the matches very dear to my heart where they win at the San Siro, because historically, I'm 30. Growing up, having watched Roma struggle, I don't care if Milan is still a banter era Milan, I don't care. That's one of those matches that I'll always remember fondly. And then, we haven't mentioned it yet, but come on, Perotti on the last match day, when we were so... We kept thinking, oh my God, are we going to have to go to the preliminary rounds of the Champions League again? Yeah. It kept going back and forth.
At a certain point, I went to the bathroom. I couldn't take it anymore. I just couldn't. I was having panic attacks in those final 10 minutes. It was unfair. Like, seriously, what Szczesny decided to have the worst game of the season. Palmieri getting injured. Mario Rui getting abused. Everything was going wrong and everything was going right at the same time. If there is one game that this can describe Roma as a fan, it's Roma Genoa from 16-17 on the last match day.
Oh, for sure. Yeah. And then watching Perotti absolutely bang that last goal in and his celebration to follow was absolutely sensational.
Otto goal, 7 su rigore. Yeah.
Oh my god. I completely forgot about Mario Rui in that match. I think people will forget.
Yeah.
He was so bad. And Szczesny too. We talk about Dzeko having a poor previous season. Szczesny was so strong in 2016-2017 that I think sometimes we forget how bad, horrible, in 2015-2016. Do we want to go through all the blunders that he made? I'm sure there's a YouTube video out there somewhere, but man, you could find plenty of them. And then it was just so weird to see him making these errors at such a critical moment. It was dumbfounding, but... Yeah, for me.
And then I remember what the reaction was when we gave him away, and we had Alisson as his substitute, as his, you know, as the guy taking over, and so much criticism, and people just didn't know what they were in for in the next season with Alisson in the goal.
Yeah, Talk about your favorite players for this season. Is it Grenier?
No, it's for me, it's Emerson. For me, it's Emerson because I, similarly to Raja, he was vital to this team because he wasn't just playing left back. He was an additional player for the midfield. He was an additional forward because of how threatening he was. I mean, people don't seem to remember how bad El Shaarawy was that season, where he barely got any playing time because of how inconsistent he was. And Perotti just couldn't score, aside from obviously being a reliable penalty taker. But if there was a difference maker, and when it came to crosses, when it came to footwork, and that season, it was Emerson on that left flank. And I know that Kolarov, you know, took over and was a cheap option, and he did great the first season round. But to me, that season from Emerson is still one of the best years of any left back I've seen at Roma in a long, long time. And I still miss him dearly. I think it was a mistake giving him away. Because he needed all the support he could get after that injury. Because he gave us so much during that season. He was playing game in, game out, playing numerous positions, always reliable, never making mistakes. And he was just as good on the offensive end as on the defensive end. And I think we'll struggle to find anybody going forward, anybody who's going to be able to replicate a season that he had in that particular year.
For me, though, Rudiger had something that I don't know why, because I still miss him. He had the injury in 2015, 2016. He comes back. We didn't know to what degree he would be performing at. Yep. I thought him and Fazio, in my opinion, because Manolas
was a no-show in that season. Jesus.
No-show in that season. Rudiger was, I don't know what it was about his game that I liked.
He was likable, and he was nasty at the same time.
Likable. I won't say he was a player of the season, but he was always one of my favorites, and I don't know why, but it still weighs on me that they sold him. Now, obviously, Roma, the following season, they got their revenge. He goes to Chelsea. Roma hammered them in the Champions League twice. But still, just something about it. I never liked his departure. It always bothered me. And then Nainggolan. That was peak Nainggolan for us. And remember how uncertain we were with him playing in that new role. Because we all remember he was playing in the number 10. Hadn't really played in that role before. Because in the previous season, 2015-2016... with Dzeko being a black hole of a player, Roma, I mean, remember they were putting Perotti as a false nine. Roma were desperate.
And Totti is still playing as a substitute.
Yes, yes. Man, that was peak Nainggolan. That was, when I think of memories in Nainggolan at Roma, I think most of the positive ones will be from that season. Because he was so damn good. So damn good. Now, the following season with Di Francesco, it felt like he was still important, but it still felt like he took a step back.
Yeah.
I don't know, man. It's still, and when I look at this list, it just sort of reaffirms that how depressing it is at times to be a Roma supporter, because you look at all these important players and it's like, oh, most of them are gone. Dzeko's still here. Perotti's still here. De Rossi's gone, Strootman's gone, Nainggolan's gone, Paredes. I won't say he's important, but you get the point. Rudiger, Mario Rui, Emerson. It's just like, man, you don't
Can I give you a hot take out here? Can I put a? I'm gonna say,
please.
if we don't lose Florenzi at the start of that campaign, we get away with a trophy that year. I'm not saying a Scudetto, but I'm saying we win a trophy that year. If we don't lose Florenzi at the start of the campaign and we have to adapt Rudiger as a right back, we come off with a trophy, because the Florenzi.
So wait, is that you assuming then that, okay, so they don't lose him, they don't buy Bruno Perez? Is that your rationale?
Well, no, because remember, Bruno Perez came in and Florenzi, he was injured in that Sassuolo game. So it was already, you know, Bruno Perez came in. I guess, I don't know what the point of that was, but the Florenzi that we saw the Florenzi that we saw in the Euro and the Florenzi that we saw at the start of the season was the Florenzi that we would never see again at Roma. And
he was good.
If we don't lose him, we don't have to adapt Rudiger as right back. We can play Rudiger instead of Manolas, who went as a starter all year long. Even though he was appalling at times and cost us many, many points, people seem to forget that Fazio was the stronghold. Manolas was nowhere to be found in that season. I believe if Florenzi manages to stay healthy, we come back with a trophy.
Wow, that might be one of your hottest takes. That is Stephen A. Smith level.
I'm just saying, I think Florenzi was such an essential part of that group, and he was still so good at that particular moment in time, that it's not really so far-fetched to think that maybe, you know, if so many things went wrong at the start of the season, but if that thing had gone right, maybe that would have been the difference maker.
And again, to think that a Roma, 87 points, you finish 4 points behind the eventual Scudetto winner, you come away from that season with nothing to show for it, nothing. That is, without question, in my opinion, the most frustrating part. And again, on paper, this is certainly, we can compare and contrast, and I'm sure we can make an entire episode about that alone. But in terms of the last 5, 6, 7 years of Roma, I think you would have to say, just in terms of strength, this is probably the strongest Roma, right? Even better than the 2013-14 version of Rudy Garcia's Roma.
And this is despite the fact that we lost a lot of important players in Pjanic and Seydou Keita in Digne. It's weird looking at that season.
Without question, and maybe that's why people wanted to hear a review of that season, because it's held in such fond memory, and maybe people again are sort of gluttons for punishment and they like rehashing all the strong players that we had that season. Yeah, very, very. Looking back on it again, particularly when you look at just the roster, it's a bit depressing. Some of the players that, in my opinion, I still think should be at Roma, but alas, they are not. So everyone, thank you again for tuning in and listening to this Looking Back series. We thank you again for all of the positive comments and feedback we've received from the first one. We hope you enjoy this one just as much. So we will make a poll next week for which season we will do next. I am curious to see. After 2009, 2010, and 2016, 2017, those were like the peak near Scudetto season.
Yes.
So curious to see where everyone would like to go with next after this one. So as always, thank you so, so much for listening. And until next time, ciao.